You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
If whoever tosses the midget the furthest gets to be the mayor.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comic book writer Edward Davis. And now your host. He hopes you have a good Thanksgiving with your family tomorrow. Unless, of course, you have any sort of socio-political disagreement, then fuck those people you've known for decades. Deese Casillas!
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for hanging out, guys. This is having a difficult... I fucking hate this system we use. It's a piece of shit. These goddamn intros. We'll figure out an intro for this show one day, or we fucking won't. Who gives a shit? I am tired of trying to figure it out. The point is, we're here. You don't come for the intro. You come for the show. We don't care about an intro. This is the intro. You're here. I'm here. Thank you for being here, guys. We appreciate you hanging out for another episode of Social Hour. I've been gone for a couple weeks, I know. I've been working on a bunch of stuff, guys. I had a lot of comedy shows going on around the region and putting the finishing touches on Killstand number 3. So that stuff is coming real fast. Anyway, you're here now again. We got a great guest today. Before we get started, as usual, guys, go to deesecomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows, live dates coming up. It is the holiday season, which means I do everything to avoid my family, which means I do more comedy, guys. So I will be at Woodlawn Comedy Club December 4th, and then I'll be at Bandera Brewing. This is all in Texas, guys, so look, Google it. Google is your friend. Bandera Brewing in Bandera, Texas on December 6th. I will be at Chubby's Ice House on December 13th, Riot Comedy Club downtown San Antonio sometime in December. I don't have that date. I'll be at Ranger Creek Brewing in San Antonio, or Ranger Creek Distillery in San Antonio on December 27th, and the THC show coming back sometime in December. I don't remember what date, but check the calendar. We'll be putting those out soon. Also, as I mentioned, Killstand number 3 is on its way, guys. That's coming in a couple weeks, so you'll have those in your hot little hands. We appreciate you guys being patient. It was 30 pages originally, then I added some extra pages. So, guys, this is a big, fat, old, honking issue you're going to get, much more than your usual comic book that we produce and much more than usual comic book that you grab off the shelf. So you're getting a lot of content for the same price, more bang for your buck, and it looks beautiful. Excited to get it in your hands. Thank you very much. That's it for my announcements, guys. Go check out everything. You know where to go. We're gonna get into it with our guest today. He's been on the show a couple times. You know him from around the indie comics world. Please welcome Ed Davis. What's up, Ed?
What's up, man? How you doing today?
I'm good, dude. I despise StreamYard so much.
It's an awful as I saw you struggling, I'm just sitting there nodding. I mean, I'm backstage, so you don't see me, but I'm agreeing with you. It's like, yes, I've dealt with this.
Oh my God.
I know what you're struggling with, and it is a gigantic pain in the ass. It's a horrible interface.
Yeah.
And for the price they charge, that shit should be way easier to deal with.
Yeah, see, look, it just did this thing that I don't know how. There you go. So now we're gone. I don't know how to get us back.
We're not here anymore.
Oh my God. This is my fucking nightmare, this goddamn system. Now I don't even know how to get us back. This is a problem. Yeah, well, there you are. And There we are. See, and there's like the wrong background behind me, and I have no fucking clue. It's just like, it's a nightmare. I fucking hate the system. So I just don't care anymore. I'm just going to, you know, Atomic Annie's tonight or not. I don't fucking know.
yeah. It's maybe so... they are, maybe they are, but, you know, we're here to promote them.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You may be listening to this on the night it is going or not. The point is it's there and you should listen to it or watch it or you whatever. We're here now. I'm here with Ed. We're going to talk about comic books and everything going on. Ed has a Kickstarter going on for his new one-shot Floaters. We've got about, when this comes out, you'll have about 11 days left to like get that Kickstarter. We'll add links in the show description, so make sure you hit it. Check it out. It looks great. The art looks cool. The little promo looks cool here on the Kickstarter. We'll talk more about that later, but guys, go check it out and follow, support, and get the book. So, Ed, what's new with you, man? Besides the book, obviously.
I mean, the Kickstarter, obviously, but yeah, it's kind of now that we're reaching November, December, kind of the con season is stopped.
Yeah.
I did one a week ago, and that's kind of the last one I have for the year. So now it's more for me. Script writing. That's what November and December entail, because I'm a teacher. That's what pays the bills. It's not indie comics, that's for sure. And I go out, and with the time that I get off, I'm able to really start cranking out scripts.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the focus now is, all right, production pretty much for this year, production is closed because the lettering for my Kickstarter book is done.
Okay.
So all I need to do is get that printed. So as far as the production side of things, that's closed out. We'll start back up again in January. Cons are closed. So now it's just script writing. And I have about four scripts that I'm working on. So I always have more than one. That way, if you get blocked on one and you can't think of a word to write for, let's say, for Immortal Era, I'll work on something. You know, I have the Karen Hunters, I have Dracula, Sherlock Holmes, I have Corruptor. So I have all of them going, and I just kind of go in, sit down, and the book that I'm feeling that day is the one I start writing. So that's today. When we're done here, I'm heading off to the library. That's where I tend to do my writing.
Okay.
I could do it in the office, but then I start thinking about things I can do around the house.
Yeah.
I get up, and you're just like, oh, well, let me start this. Let me do that. Next thing you know, I'm cleaning out the refrigerator and I'm not writing my book.
You know, that is such a thing that people don't talk about, is that being able to work from home is a blessing. You know, I haven't had to go into an office in 12 years, something like that. And it's nice. It's beautiful. I get to be home. I get to tend my garden. I get to hang out with my dogs all day. Like, those things are great. But also, you have all your stuff, and it is so easy to end up just doing all your stuff all day and not work. It takes discipline. I actually really, especially when I'm going to have like a heavy work day, I really try to like get up, do my routine. Like, I read, coffee, gym, come home, and I actually like shower, get ready, and put myself together like I would be going somewhere. Even if I'm working at home, because it's just that little bit of, because if you're just kind of bivouacking in your pajamas all day, it's real easy to just kind of chillax through the day, you know?
Yeah.
Having that extra bit of discipline to be able to do that is not something that's talked about enough, I think.
Yeah. And I know I didn't, even when I was teaching and we got moved into the online teaching, I tried to do it from the house, and yeah, my mind was not focused on it. There was a stretch that I had to where we weren't allowed to go into our classrooms, but then they let us go into the classrooms. I mean, it was an empty classroom, but just, I needed that process of getting up, getting dressed, and getting the hell out.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't focus, as I couldn't teach from my dining room table or from my office. It was something I tried because the thought of, I don't have to drive, I don't have to, you know, leave the house, sounded great until I actually did it. And for me, I couldn't make it work. So as soon as they let me get out, I was out and just sitting in an empty classroom, because it just, I think I needed that routine. But I'm also someone, I've been teaching now for 26 years.
Yeah.
So that routine is so built into me that to break it so quickly, it just didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, that is like habitualness, and then all of a sudden you just, oh, I'm just home all day. It's like a really long summer break. Do you teach college, or what do you teach?
I teach elementary right
now. Oh, you do? Okay. Why do you think you're in college? What can I ask what grade you teach in?
I'm teaching third grade. I've taught basically third through sixth. So I've done a lot of the elementary grades, and I'm credentialed to teach up to 12th grade. And if I went for a little bit, I could get credentialed for college. But where it stands right now, after when you have 26 years in a place, all of your pension and everything is kind of stuck. And I only have 8 more years until I can retire. So to leave would just kind of scramble everything up. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm strapped in. I'm ready to finish it all off.
Yeah. At that point, that's interesting, being able to have kind of some perspective working with kids and, you know, in comic books also. Not to say the comic books you do are not for that age range, but, you know, being able to see kids and how they interact with comic book or comic book adjacent material, you know, how their introduction to a lot of it's probably through the films or cartoons, you know, into the Spider-Verse, that type of stuff, or just being very manga influenced, you know.
Yeah, manga seems to be really huge with the kids. I mean, I watch them in the library, they will flock right to the manga graphic novel section. And you have Raina Telgemeier, she writes the books that the girls go and rush out to get. So it's like Smile, Sisters, and even my daughter grew up loving those ones too. So that particular market, she's got the girls cornered, and they will read the books. I have a classroom library. They'll read them till the pages fall out.
Yeah.
And then I try to do all the good kid-friendly book, like comic books that I can put in there. So if there are indie creators making kid-friendly stuff, because I know Matt Knowles made one, him and his partner Steph made a kid-friendly comic. And I said, yeah, get me a retail bundle and I'll just spread them around my classroom, because I love to spread those indie comics to the kids so they can see that there is more than just, you know, Spider-Man and Marvel and DC, that there's good stuff being created by all kinds of people. And then you get the cool thing of like, oh yeah, I know that author and they signed it for us. Like, whoa. So the kids are highly impressed by that, but it's just getting them reading things and, you know, reading outside of just, you know, the mainstream is always exciting. And yeah, just seeing how their eyes light up with a graphic novel. It's great. 'Cause you know that's the future market we need to eventually reach.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're passionate about comics now is great, because you wonder what are comics going to look like in, you know, in 10 years, because we're dealing with the TikTok generation. We're dealing with one that they're hugely into manga, and Western comics really aren't working for them. So what can Western comics do to grab them again? And it's not bullshit crossovers that Marvel and DC keep putting out.
Yeah, well, it's not Godzilla versus the Justice League. That's not going to be the thing that...
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. The kids are smart enough to know that's bullshit. And I mean, when I was younger, I was collecting comics from the point of probably about first or second grade. And I was buying, you know, the trades back then, you know, just collected versions of all the big names, because that's what you want at that time. You want Spider-Man, you want Superman, you want Batman.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about what's indie and all of that kind of stuff, because really indie back in the, you know, early 80s looked a lot different than it does now. It was kind of shitty looking black and white comics for the most part, and then some good black and white ones thrown into the mix. And the kids like the vivid colors and things like that, so they're not going to run to some kind of a black and white book. But yeah, just seeing now they do run to the black and white books, which is crazy, because, you know, they used to want the color. Now the mangas are generally black and white with a couple colored pages.
Yeah.
And they're running to those, but they still do love the other books too. So it's like, what are we going to do to meet this market that's coming our way? Because that market, you look at Barnes & Noble, it's 80% manga now, and the Western comics are kind of on the other side of the gigantic manga display.
Oh yeah. I mean, you'll get like eight rows shelves of manga, and then you get like one shelf of American comic books, you know.
Yeah.
And it is interesting though, because, you know, I always think about it. this conundrum. You know, as someone who grew up in the 80s and 90s and watched this digital age happen, and, you know, there was this talk of comic books going away and everything going digital, which, you know, I'm not sure. I think we're a lot farther away from that than people think. I think there's still a lot of, it's been proven, there's a lot of people that still want the tangible, you know, there's more people going back to DVDs and VHS right now than more digital content, you know. Yeah. And also, obviously, we lost a lot of readers to manga, but, you know, I've been reading a lot that this last year has been, there's a big increase in comic book sales, big increase in the demographic skewing younger again. I think a big part of that is what DC Comics has been doing with their pocket comics, like their smaller digest size, which, you know, is like a manga in disguise, or I guess a comic book in disguise as a manga, and then which was brilliant. And then also the easy access points with the Absolute line and creating a really quality product. So I think they've, you know, for somehow DC just like ninja'd in there and became the powerhouse and left Marvel in the dust in this last year. And not to say that, you know, we just want these kids to be reading that, but that is an access point to everything else. Cause I feel like you have to go through that to get to the indie stuff. You can't just, you know what, it's harder to get into the indie stuff first, just for purely access to it, you know, among other things.
Yeah, you can't walk into a Barnes & Noble and find all the indie comics. You might find at a local Barnes & Noble a few indie people who have got their books on the shelves, but there's not an indie shelf for them to access. You really got to find those. The kids are going to find those at the con.
Yeah.
They're going to walk in and see when people are selling at a con. And you do get, I do get kids, older kids, you know, middle school, high school kids coming to my table, and that's who you want to start reading your book. I mean, the elementary kids, that's, you know, some of their parents don't give a shit, and they're like, yeah, my kid watches Terrifier. I don't care if they read your comic book. So at that point, you're like, all right, I guess if the parents are okay with it.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's where they're going to find you. And the parents that are taking their kids to cons and actually bringing them into small press or bringing them into Artist Alley, those are ones who are looking to discover new stuff. So you got to have the pitch to sell them on your books.
Yeah, 100%. And what, you know, what I think is really beneficial, it's in, at least in this forum, it's also crumbling society and others. But the fact that there's no secrets from kids anymore, you know, with the internet, there's no, there's, you know, there were things were taboo or things we didn't know about, things we couldn't just see at the click of a button, or you didn't have to, you just talk and it'll appear on your phone. But with that has allowed a lot of kids, I think, to be more curious about things that maybe wouldn't be content they would normally consume at that age 20 years ago. Like I was at a con a couple months ago, and this middle-aged guy walks up with his daughter, and she's, I don't know, I'm probably going to pin her at 12, but she could have been, she could have been 10, she could have been 14, you know, somewhere in that. Yeah, I'm bad with that. But she just walks up and starts looking at my book, and it's like, oh wow. And he's like, oh, you like that? And I, you know, he's just like, go ahead, look at it. And she's looking at it, and she's like, what's it about? And I, you know, my book is about a guy who wants to end his own life. So I kind of like, I'm trying to put on the kid's gloves when I'm describing it. And I could see her like being like, okay, like tell me more. And he's asking questions. So I'm like, okay. And I just tell him, and she's like, oh wow. And just looks at him, and he goes, do you want it? And she goes, yeah. And I go, okay. I go, might not be. And he's like, no, she wants it. So I sell it to him. They come back the next day of the convention, and they're back, and he goes, she loves your book. She wants the second one. And I go, oh, okay. And I sell him that one. And then he hit me up like a month later, and he prepaid for number three. And I'm like,
wow.
And I'm like, it just really blew my mind that I'm like, this, like, I would have looked at this girl and been like, eh, like, you know, like judge the situation. But
yeah,
we're in an era where these kids are, you know, more more thoughtful in advance than we think sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I would have potentially lost someone who grew up on my comic book because, so it's really interesting that there is that demographic out there. It's just a part of it is, I think, creators not giving credit to these, this younger generation to be advanced mm-hmm. enough to read something like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, it's just the reluctance of, I'm not going to do it when there's not a parent present. And sure. I always, the parent walks up and I always say, okay, I want to give you the warning. There's a lot of bloody content. There's profanity. And then the quick question is there any sex? No. Okay, cool. Go ahead. Tell us about it. It's like the, there's the line, like, all right, there's a decapitated heads. Proceed. There's a boob. No.
Yeah.
No, how dare you?
It is funny. The moral line of people being like, God forbid someone see, you know, anatomy. But if it, you feel free to, murder as many people as you want in this book.
The death count doesn't bother me at all as long as they stay close. So,
We are funny.
I features. Give the warning, and a lot of times it's like yours. The parent goes, no, go ahead. Please tell us about it. And I kind of give them the same thing. I have like the kids glove version of my elevator pitch. And a lot of times the kids are just like, I really want this book. And yeah, it's funny because you don't think they're your market. But then I know one of the teachers at my school bought it for her niece, which is, she's like 12 to 13 age.
Yeah.
And her niece blasted through the entire trade in one night. And she's like, oh, she wants the rest. She wants everything you've got.
Yeah.
So it's, we underestimate that, sadly, because every kid's walking around with a supercomputer in their hands.
Yeah.
They're a lot more sophisticated than we were, because we were just morons back in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, we were lucky to have survived with the dumb shit we were into. Now they can research like, oh, that's probably not a great idea.
Right. Yeah, we just had, Encyclopedia Britannica from 30 years before we were born with information to get.
Yeah.
We're like, it's like just still talking about the supercontinent of Pangaea as fact. It's current fact. You're like, this, I don't think that's happening anymore.
Yeah. We're just one mega continent. Yeah. What the hell?
So where the future is with the younger generation. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like this with everything, the back and forth of we swing so far in each direction in everything in life. And I think that this next generation of kids coming up, I mean, there's statistics that show a bunch that the, you know, younger generations are, you know, not interested in social media. And they think that, like, and they're going back to more tactile things. And mm-hmm. I think this is a big opportunity for our market and any market to really like capture this generation, and they're hungry for like real art, you know, because they were just barraged with 30-second garbage videos for the last couple years, and they're like, no, this isn't real.
Yeah, this is junk. Yeah, this is, you know, how many bad lip syncers on TikTok does one need to watch? And they're looking for it, and it's great. And the thing is, hopefully they're good enough to discriminate with AI, because that's what's going to be the new barrage of stuff they're going to see. And hopefully, and my daughter's very discriminating. She's 15 and she's like, oh, look at that. That collar doesn't connect. And this is garbage. And it's like, I can't believe they're selling a crappy AI calendar at Five Below or wherever.
Yeah.
So she's already discriminating. And I'm thinking, okay, that's good. That means this generation isn't going to be duped by, you know, the AI imagery, which, you know, is 80% good, but, you know, some people don't care. 80% good is good enough.
Right.
And they'll buy a shitty calendar full of AI art because they don't, they're not going to care. It's going to go on their wall and be like, yeah, no one's going to come up and scrutinize it. But, you know, my daughter's sitting there like, oh, look at this. This is insulting. And I love that she's doing that. And hopefully her generation is smart enough to know it's insulting, so we can kind of squash it before it grows too large.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I've never thought of this, but I wonder if there's something to where the younger generation is more keen to AI because they're you know, it's happening in real time. I mean, not that it's not happening in real time to us, but we had like this slow incremental crawl of like the scene shifting, right? Whereas mm-hmm. for them, they were living in this reality and then it was just all of a sudden a shift, right? So, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, like maybe they have like a keener ability to see this, the AI. Because, I mean, you know, they talk about the uncanny valley and the ability, you know, that we may not be able to even notice the difference. Right now, usually I can see a commercial or see something like, that's AI, that's AI. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's things where I'm like, is that, you know?
Yeah, like, it's getting better. And we're watching its infancy. And, you know, what will it look like in 10 years? And, you know, will it replace a lot of artists? Because you especially Marvel and Disney, and they would love to just fire all the artists that they have employed with them and just do it all through AI.
100%. I mean, if they could get away with it without a complete shitstorm from the unions and from the fans, they would absolutely do it in a heartbeat. It's like, you know, everyone praised Jim Lee recently when he was at that convention. I think it might have been the one in Spain that they all went to or something. But he came out and talked about AI. And was like, DC is not going to use AI. We're strictly against AI art for the foreseeable future. And it's like, yeah, you're saying that now because the wind's blowing that way. But like 3 years ago, he was talking about how he would, if AI could replicate his art, he'd love to keep being able to make Jim Lee art and his family, like, be able to make art off his name after he's gone. But it's like, yeah, no one was bitching about it then. But now it's an issue, so you got to be like, oh, hey, yeah, we don't like that either, of course. So it's only...
Yeah, it's convenient to hate it right now, so he comes out and hates it.
Right, it's the optics, you know. It's the mm-hmm. optics of it. I mean, you really got to consider how long until all that is just accepted and it's decided that we do it, and then... You know, then it's what people just go with it or they don't, you know?
Yeah.
So it is, it's an interesting landscape. But yeah, I think with I think it feels like younger people are pushing back against it a little bit, and we're starting mm-hmm. to get a little more, you know, I don't know about you, but I feel it at conventions. It seems like I'm talking to more younger people and they are more, or at least the ones I am, are more open to trying something like something new. Whereas, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how many times I'm barking at a convention and I'm like, hey man, like, you know, I'm like, you like comic books? Like, oh yeah, I love comic books. I'm like, check it out. This is my book I just published. And they kind of stand 3 feet away from the table and they do this. They look over and go, cool. And then you're like, well, do you love comic books or do you, you know, it's like you're acting like this is a hostage situation where younger people, I'm like, hey, you like comic books? They're like, oh yeah, I love them. And they're over at the table like, is this yours? Oh, mm-hmm. that's so cool. You know, like they still have that passion to discover things, you know.
Yeah, and they want, I mean, I think of it like I go to a lot of concerts, and when I was in college, I would go to concerts for just band discovery.
Right.
And I was always looking for this new band, and you want to be the one who's got the t-shirt before anyone else does and make that discovery. And I think it's the same with indie comics and things like that. The kids want to be the first one to find it. They want to be the ones able to tell their friends, like, oh yeah, I found this great book, Immortal Era. I found this great book, Kill Stan. And, you know, no one knows this book, but check it out. And they start passing it to their friends because it's this great undiscovered gem for them. And they get that satisfaction of, oh, yeah, I was there first. And then if it does go to Netflix or something, they can be like, oh, yeah, I've been reading that thing since, you know, 2018 or 2019. I know this book, and these are new bandwagon guys. So they could be the cool, like, I found it first thing.
Yeah.
And they love that discovery. And yeah, I've had young kids come up to the table, buy the book, and they're coming up the next day and telling me how much they love this character or that character and how certain personality types resonate with them. And it's great when you see that, when you see that they're passionate about what you created, and then, you know, people are going to hate it. It's just how it goes.
Yeah.
But the fact that they are out there trying to discover it, because if we're just trying to sell to people our age, our market's going to die. You know, it's going to get too old. They're going to get too old to walk around the con before you know it. And next thing you know, we got no one to sell to. So if we don't move our books to the youth, then, you know, we're going to die with our age group.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in part of it is too, I think that a lot of these kids, you know, it's like, I think we're about the same age. You know, when we were young, like anything that our parents were into or older people, it was like hacky and like not, we wanted our thing, you know, which is why I think a lot of kids, younger generation, gravitated towards manga because like, you know, Spider-Man's like their dad's thing. It's like, it's like, it's from the 60s. The 60s? What are you talking about? They're like, well, that's, you know, when Lincoln was president, you know, they're like.
Yeah, there's no perception of time. It's just that's old. Right. You don't need that old stuff. And yeah, you're right. The manga is something their parents look at like, well, that's in black and white and you have to read it backwards. Why would you even waste your time with that? And they're like, hell yeah, that's why.
Yeah, because you don't understand it. Because
you just told me not to, so now it's my favorite thing.
Right.
So yeah, it's something that I think eventually the kids will come to embrace the things that their parents love. But for a while, it's that, yeah, I'll show them. I'm going to like something that they hate and watch them get all uncomfortable. Because yeah, I mean, you're out there. Like, I think about all the bands that my dad listened to. I can listen to them now. I can enjoy them. But at the time, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you're listening to Pink Floyd. Well, I'm going to play NWA. Like, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
Because you're going to find something that makes your parents go, what the hell is that? That's garbage. And just like their parents at one time would have said, that Led Zeppelin and that, you know, Pink Floyd, that's garbage. So, you know, whatever they love, we're going to look at as garbage. So that's why I've tried to be more open with what my kids have brought my way. Is like, okay, what's good about this? Show me. Let's check it out. Not the, this is garbage. I mean, there's a few things they've played and I'm just like, wow, that is terrible. But I'm not going to tell them that. I can see it's awful, but it's, you know, why do I need to be that one to tell them how much what they love is shit? Because I was told that. And what did it do? Made me love it more.
Right, right. Yeah, and also it's like, you know, I mean, you know, art is subjective. Everything's subjective. It's all time and place. It's like, you know, it's like when the Miss Marvel show came out on Disney Plus, right? And and everyone was hating on it. And I'm like, yo, what about a show, about a coming of age show about a 13-year-old Muslim girl, did you think was supposed to be for a 40-year-old straight white guy? Like, what, like, that's not the demo they're going for. Like, I'm not saying don't like it, but if you don't be mad the show's not for you. It wasn't fucking made for you. Like, let other people enjoy things too, you know. Sorry, not everything can cater to you specifically in this genre, you know. Like, it's gotta, there's room for so much.
Yeah, and the problem is Disney is a company that's just that they can't take the insults and they freak out and they cancel because, you know, some dickheads on Reddit are yelling at their stuff. And what did you do? You had a market who loved it, but they're not going on Reddit and declaring it, you know, great. They're just enjoying it. They're watching and enjoying it week by week, where the, you know, the subreddit of people that want everything to be theirs, they're the ones that are loud. So Disney's like, oh, we better get rid of that. I mean, look at what happened with that the episode 9 of Star Wars. They basically rewrote the whole movie to appeal to the subredditors and made the most unwatchable Star Wars movie that's ever existed. And I never thought that would happen after the prequels. And yet here they went and did that.
You managed to somehow fuck this up, guys. Yeah. It's, I mean, you just got to pick a lane and go for it. And hopefully, cause this is an interesting thing. Like, I got a good friend of mine who's, you know, like, oh, I don't know, at least 10 years younger than I am, if not more, right? And he's a comedy buddy, and we used to do a movie podcast years ago, and we talked about how much he loved the prequels. And part of it was because he was a kid when the prequels came out. So like, that was his Star Wars movies, you know? So for him, it was cool. And you know, it really took that conversation for me to be like, Yeah, like, I think those movies are terrible. Like, I don't revisit them.
No.
But for him, it's like right place, right time. Because there's a lot of crap. Like, listen, I watch Commando a lot. It's not a good movie.
It's terrible, but nostalgia for us.
Right. So, like, you know, it's one of those things where you have to, like, you kind of have to internalize and be like, oh, this is just because I love it because I watched it when I was 12 and a half and an idiot, and mm-hmm. And it just cemented in my dumb brain, and there it lives forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
And then the ones that love the prequels are going to be talking shit about the kids who grew up with 7, 8, and 9.
Right.
And those are the characters they love. And they're going to be saying, well, how could you like those movies? They're garbage. The prequels are the good ones. And then there's going to be us old guys yelling at them like, you're both wrong. And the good trilogies, you know, are trilogies. So in the end, we're all right because it's what you grew up on. And it's what cemented with you and you began to love. And yeah, we can look at, you know, those ones and Hayden Christensen and all that and despise it. But yet I was at LA Comic Con and that guy sold out every time slot at $300 a pop. So it's like, you know what? He's found his market where, you know, 10 years ago when these kids, when they would have been too young, he would have been sitting there at an empty table as people like us were like, that guy sucks and walked right by. But now that market's reached adulthood, yeah, it's huge. It was crazy. I'd never seen anything like it where he would add more slots and they'd sell out instantly. And I'm thinking, there's a group that love him. And I have coworkers that are about that. They're in their early 30s and that's their Star Wars.
Right.
They'll watch ours. They can enjoy it, but that's the ones they love.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, it's one of those weird generational things where you have to kind of be able to understand that and accept that, you know, things are, mm-hmm. you know, we're getting old. We don't understand the youth. That's all. I want to go back and talk about, let's start this conversation. You were talking about writing multiple books at once. And you know, how you balance that. And, you know, you said kind of depending on what you're feeling, but does it make it hard to do you ever feel like it's hard to finish or accomplish a book, or do you have timelines with which book you want to get out and you want to write something else, or, you know, how do you balance that?
I usually set timelines for the books that I need to finish at a specific time. But what I find is if I know I have to write one book, that book will not come to me that day. So having the four books, what I do is I write all the notes for the issue. So I know all the major beats that need to happen. So I sit down and usually it'll be the first day I start, when I've closed out a specific issue, I will go and note out 4 or 5 different issues at once.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, the extensive notes that are saying, okay, these are the major plot points that are going to happen. So you pretty much have the 24 pages all fleshed out in a loose way. And then I go back and say, okay, well, now I have a reason I need to finish the Dracula Sherlock Holmes book because someone gave me a deadline. So that becomes the one that I work on. But if I'm sitting there and I'm kind of stuck on Dracula Sherlock Holmes, I pull out the notes and say, okay, well, let me go back to Immortal Era and I can work for a couple minutes on that one. And I find I'm able to kind of jump from book to book without any kind of difficulty. It's when I was talking about it on my show on Saturday, I said, this is where ADHD works for me because my mind never moves in a straight line.
Yeah,
it's always going this way, that way, this way, that way. So the fact that I can't think in a straight line kind of saves me because you think, all right, here, follow. Never mind. Let's go this way. And then you start writing something else. So I'm going to go after we're done here. I'm going to go to the library for at least, I set a clock. I think of it as, okay, this is a work day for me. I'll be there for at least 6 hours and I'll probably write in 3 different books in those 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, once if you learn how to harness ADHD, it's a superpower, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so interesting. You know, I love hearing people talk about what, you know, their process because in what works for them. Because, you know, I'm a little more like, it's tough. I try to be linear because I want to finish a project, but also, you know, and you probably, this is probably the bane of your existence. It's a blessing and a curse. So many ideas coming to you that excite you also, where you're like, oh, I should. And then it's sometimes it's like, God, I gotta finish this so I can write this. So I can write this, you know. But at least you know you'll be busy.
Yeah, and that's the books in the loose note stage, where I'm like, okay, here's an idea. This is this nugget of an idea. Let me write it down, and then it's like, all right, you're trying to focus on whatever book it may be, and then that stupid loose idea just keeps itching at you. So you thought, all right, well, about to turn these notes from loose notes into complete, you know, script notes of what how the flow of the 24 pages is going to go. And yeah, that's the problem. And it's one of those things where I'll tell my wife, ooh, I just had this cool new idea. She's like, oh my gosh, it's just constant flow of, ooh, I got a new idea. And it may take, you know, 6 to 8 months, but eventually it'll be a script and I'm out hunting for an artist for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the hard part of balancing what you do and when. And do you look at that? Because, you know, I do, part of what, for me, looking forward in 2026 and the things I want to do with, you know, finishing the book I'm on, the other books, and where I want Inferno Comics as a brand to go, I do look at, you know, part of it is marketing in a sense, where I want there to be a breadth of variety under the banner. So, you know, do you consider that too? Because there's some things where I'm like, oh, I want to write this next, but also that's kind of too similar to this thing, or like feels in the same. I want to write something wildly different.
Yeah.
To have, you know, so I can be like, hey, when someone comes to the booth, you can be like, I've got this or this, not I've got this and also this, which is very similar to this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I have Immortal Era. I have Corruptor. It's a shared universe story. They're shared universe stories. And it's kind of, if you don't like one, you're probably not going to like the other. But now adding Floaters, it is 100% in a different realm. I have another book, Karen Hunters, which is vastly different than the other one. So that's what I wanted to do. That was my goal, same as yours, is bring the variety. And then I'm also working on a little children's story that's more like a Goosebumps kind of realm of story, where there will be something like, okay, your 10-year-old whose parents are definitely not going to let them read the book with all the severed heads, they will let them read the one about the haunted house. So that's been my goal for a long time, is to diversify the table, because the more you have, the better chance you have of making that sale when someone actually stops, because the majority of the people aren't even going to stop. They're going to keep walking. They're moving with conviction to the other thing that interests them. But the ones that stop, if you only have, like for what I have now, something in the shared universe of Immortal Era that gets very dark, that's not going to be, you know, very family friendly, then they're going to move on because they don't want their 10-year-old to read that. But if I bring that diversity to the table, then hopefully that gets a better chance of making the sale. Because, I mean, I don't know what you're having experience with cons right now, but it's harder and harder to sell and even get back your table, especially with California's table booth prices. So.
I feel like I definitely felt it in the last half of the year. You know, I'm tired of saying this, but it's saying it because it is. It's just the economy for people. I think, you know, and this is, you know, we are a luxury for people, and especially indie comics is a luxury for people, because most people, if they're going to buy comic books, it's one of the things, like, I talked to my girlfriend a lot about it, and she does a lot of design work and done some marketing stuff, and very, you know, brilliant what she does. But like, I always have to explain her to him, like, you know all that, but I also know comic books, and I know comic book fans, and comic book fans are extremely fickle, extremely also very loyal, meaning fickle, like they like what they like. They don't want to, you know, and it's sometimes hard to get them to even look at anything that might be different. So if they do have a limited, if that budget starts to truncate, it's even harder, you know. You're like, they're mm-hmm. like, listen, I just buy Punisher and that's it, or whatever, yeah. you know, whatever Batman books are coming. That's it. I can't stray. So, or, you know, Ed Brubaker, whatever, it doesn't matter. You just, yeah. their thing. So yeah, I mean, it has been harder at conventions to get, to make sales and just even get, I mean, even attendance. I think in the last mm-hmm. half of the year, I felt attendance at almost every show I went to was slow.
Yeah. And that's the biggest factor. If you pack the room, we're going to have a chance.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to see people, they're going to see the art. They're going to do that stutter step. And you're like, hey, want to come over here and hear about a new comic series? And there's that chance of a sale. But when you're looking at a row and you can picture the tumbleweeds in your brain, you know you're in trouble, because yeah. you can't sell to an empty row. And then I know with a lot of the cons I've done lately, you see the same kind of circlers.
Yeah,
like, all right, this is the same five people that they're just circling. They're just walking up and down this row. They have no interest in your book or anybody's book. Their hands are empty, and those are the only bodies you're seeing. So yeah. it's that struggle. Like you said, attendance has been really poor. And then on the flip side of it, table prices are going up. So here they are raising table prices. So I think they're trying to recoup their money on the backs of the exhibitors
yeah.
because the attendees aren't coming.
Yeah, which is just going to be a bite them both ways, because then exhibitors aren't going to come. Because, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't mind. I get it. I've been in creative arts long enough where I know that you're gonna break even or lose money on some things just to get your mm-hmm. product out there. That's just yeah. happens. But if you're breaking even or losing money on almost every weekend, then it's like, yeah, this just isn't viable. Like, I can't.
Yeah,
I can't justify.
Your time is worth something at that point. And right. You have to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can justify it a little bit. You know, I can justify, you know, being like, oh, well, you know, I broke even, but also I talked to some cool creators and I, you know,
yeah.
I sold 40 books and that's 40 people. And, you know, maybe they'll buy the mm-hmm. second book and whatever.
Yeah.
But when you're doing that almost every weekend, you start to go, maybe I can just stay home and not.
Yeah. You know? It becomes, you have to weigh everything, because do you want to give up 3 days of your time to break even multiple times? If you have one bad show, then the next one is good, then it's fine. And I had a really rough end of the year with the big cons, and then I did a few smaller ones, and that's where all the gold was.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't just think, that you have to do the big names. A lot of these small cons are going to be better, because the people that go to them, they're going specifically to buy books. They're not going for a celebrity, because there are no celebrities there to see. I did a book fair, and yeah, there were no celebrities. The celebrities were just authors. A lot of them were self-published authors. So at that point, not all of them are going to go for comic books. If you're at a book fair, a lot of people want proper books. But if you have, especially my trades,
yeah,
they were just gold. No one wanted floppies, but the trades were blowing out. And I had never thought about doing book fairs. I'm just looking at, okay, fill in the blank Comic-Con and going to do that. And I'm like, you know what? I sell books. Why the hell am I not going to book fairs?
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah. I think you got to think outside the box a little bit. I mean, I know personally, like they do these shows at the library here in San Antonio once a year that I mm-hmm. do really well at. There's this group that does like these horror kind of conventions. They do a show about once a month, and I do a couple of those every year and do really well at them. I'm the only indie comic creator there. You know, yeah. I mean, there's people that maybe a couple vendors that maybe have a box or two of, you know, back issues, random comics.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm the only indie comic creator there, and it's like, it's an audience that, it's an uncaptured audience, you know?
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, so like an untapped audience there, and things like, there's a bookstore in town that called Half Price Books. They've got a bunch of locations, and they let you set up a table on Saturdays if you, you know, schedule it out and sell mm-hmm. books. And I've done that a couple times, and, you know, it's like, I'll be there for 4 hours and I'll sell 40, 50 books. And it's
yeah.
like, okay, great. Not only that, but like, this is in my town. I get to go mm-hmm. home. And if these people like this product, they can reach me, you know, like
yeah.
literally we're probably 20 minutes away from each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, stuff like that. And the small conventions, like you said, I did, I think, 33 shows in 2025. And my best success was some of the smaller ones, you know. Smaller table fee and easy, you know, it's like not a lot of celebrities, but the people there are engaged and they're there because they love it. They're not there because they want to get, you know, fucking Ted DiBiase's signature or some something like that or whatever. So and it's you gotta figure out what works best.
Yeah, because in the end you don't want to waste your time. You don't want to go there and just keep losing. And when you sell to an audience, especially at little things like that book place you're talking about, people go there for a specific reason. They want books and they're going to be impressed that you are the author and they're getting to meet the author. I mean, how many times at one of those little shows, like, wow, you wrote this? That's so cool. That's so impressive. Where at a Comic-Con, they're like, oh yeah, well, Jim Lee's over there. I don't give a shit about you.
Yeah. Yep. I literally did a show in Dallas a couple months ago where Jim Lee was there. And I talked to plenty of people, but all of them have handfuls of stuff signed by Jim Lee. And they're like, I don't have any money. And I'm like, yeah. I'm sure you don't. I get it. It's okay. Like, I get it. It's Jim Lee. He's infinitely cooler than anything I'm doing.
Yeah.
but also as a creator, I look at stuff like that now and I'm like, I don't think I want to go to that show, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the horror con that I used to do. They raised their table fee. Now it's $8.50, and I thought,
holy shit,
that's not going to work. And they're like, but we got this celebrity for next year. You should really reconsider. I'm thinking, well, those three celebrities you named are going to gobble up everybody's free money and time. So by the time they leave getting those autographs, which will probably take them 4 hours to get all three, unless they pay for the VIP, they're going to walk out like, that sounds great. I'm broke.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's some really great shows that you can get into that. I mean, my favorite show I do every year is a show in San Antonio. It's one day. It's $75 for the table and it's great. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it was just 2 weeks ago and I had a great day. You know, like they have a couple celebrity guests, creator celebrity guests, Rick Leonardi was there, Corinne Howell was there. They were supposed to have David Marquez, but he wasn't able to make it, and that was it. But I talked to a ton of people there, and it's all comics. There's no like Funko Pops, there's no one with 3D printed dragons, there's no one, you know, there's no one with just shirts they printed off of whatever, you know, some screen that they bought, you know, that they bought online for $10 to throw on a million shirts, and none of that crap.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really, shows like that where you're like, oh, these people are all here for us.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, if you're not doing well, it's you or your product is a problem.
Yeah, you got to rethink your game if you can't succeed at one like that.
Yeah.
Because those are the ones where I'm blowing books out, because then it's like, all right, I know I'm standing around a lot of great creators. How can I bring the eyes to me? So it's like, yeah, you got to step your game up, and shows like that are where it'll work. Because when it's, you know, one of the big, like LA Comic Con, for example.
Yeah.
You're just a drop in the bucket of what they want to see.
Oh yeah.
They might be there to buy the toys or buy the exclusive Funko Pops or buy, you know, the autographs of all the celebrities. And indie comics, they may never even step into your area.
Right. Right.
They'll go to the entire con and never go into small press, never go into Artist Alley, because that's not what they're there for.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really just capturing what you can and finding the right one. So, well, let's take a look at your Kickstarter here. Let's talk about this. I need to, let's see if I can figure out how to. I know I've done this before. Get this pulled up.
Let me see. I might be able to share it if it lets me.
Oops.
All right, so I don't know if you see it. I think I pulled it up for sharing.
I don't know where that. Oh, there it is. Okay, so let's watch that trailer and take a look at this bad boy.
All right.
Are you or someone you love experiencing eye floaters?
Doctors will tell you they're harmless, tiny clumps of vitreous gel drifting across your vision, a simple byproduct of aging. But I'm here to tell you the truth. Floaters aren't harmless. They're parasites, silent, patient invaders that burrow into your mind. They whisper, they command, they turn you against those you love until violence feels inevitable. If you've begun to see them, seek solitude. Those around you are no longer safe. Your thoughts are not your own. Flee while you still can. Don't trust yourself, and whatever you do, don't trust your eyes. Floaters is a 28-page one-shot horror story chronicling one man's descent into madness after developing eye floaters. Written entirely in hospital waiting rooms between seemingly endless, painful tests, it captures the unease of losing control piece by piece. The book features haunting artwork by Dan Schmidt with colors by Maya Opasek. And the campaign also includes variant covers by Cesar Oliveira, William Russell, and Fish Lee.
All right. So this book, you're about 87% to its goal. You got $250 away. Like I said, yeah. Guys, we'll be you're definitely going to hit this goal. Everyone check it out and get on this Kickstarter while you can. Even once it hits a goal, you can still get the book. So,
yeah.
Who's the name of the artist?
Dan Schmidt.
I like his art a lot.
Yeah, he does great art. He's actually my letterer for Immortal Era, but he's done a couple books of his own. He did two graphic novel-sized stories, Worms Crawl In and Worms Crawl Out. And I had read his books before I even hired him as my letterer, because my previous letterer just up and quit with no notice. Like the day before he was supposed to start lettering, the Kickstarter had already closed. He's like, yeah, I can't do this anymore. I don't have the software. And I said, well, how about I buy you the software? He's like, no, I just can't do it anymore. So I reached out to Dan and said, dude, are you able to letter? I said, I know you published two books, so you think you could letter for me? And he jumped right in. And I always loved his art style, but never had the book that would quite fit what I wanted with his art style until this one. And I was, as it talked about in the trailer, I was writing it in hospital waiting rooms. I'm sitting in there. It ended up being 17 hours over 2 days in different hospital waiting rooms. And I was writing this story and I said, Dan, I'm writing this story. I don't know when it'll be ready, but do you want to be in on it? And I told him, and he's like, oh yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm in. And it probably took, I'd say 8 months. It was one of those, we talked about the loose notes, the more, you know, refined notes. It was definitely in the refined note stage, right? I already started doing page panel layouts and everything.
Yeah.
But still loose, because so much crazy shit was going down in the hospital. All of it was in the story at that point. But some of it just couldn't make the cut because I didn't know how does it serve the plot. Because the first thing that happens is the night that I went in, when I first known that the floaters were really bad, it was about 40% of my visual field just overtaken by them. I went into the hospital. The particular doctor I had's like, oh, it's fine. You're fine. And, you know, it just comes with age, which I definitely threw that in the story. And as soon as I walked out the door, this homeless woman just grabs me, shakes me, and goes, you're not real. And that's kind of where the idea hatched. It was nothing to that point. I had no idea I was going to write a story about eye floaters. I was actually working on Immortal Era stuff, because I'm sitting there, I'm stuck in the hospital waiting room all those hours. I may as well do something productive. So I was just writing Immortal Era. And then as soon as I was grabbed by the homeless woman, I thought, there's something to this. What if I'm not real? What if these floaters just made me a fake person?
Yeah.
So that's where the story hatched. And then the next day, who knew I was going to be stuck in hospital waiting rooms for the next 13 hours. So at that point, I'm writing it in, I started with loose notes. Then the notes turned into script, and it's like, all right, I still have more time. So tell the nurse, grab me some more paper, please. And I'm just kind of writing this story as I'm stuck in there waiting for the specialist who's at a different hospital to drive so he can do the laser surgery that needs to get done.
Wow.
And that's where this idea just kind of started from loose notes all the way to pretty much, I'd say, first draft script by the time I left the hospital. But then it was still just, it was such a weird and negative headspace. I didn't want to revisit it until finally I'm like, you know what? It's time. Let's dust off all those notes and let's actually sit down and type them and turn it into a real story.
Wow. This is great because I didn't realize this was based off like your actual experience in floaters as far. It's so funny because I started seeing those little things. Mm-hmm. One of them. I saw one of them that I used to get all the time. I haven't seen them in a while. Years, actually. But I used to get one all the time. And it was always like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, because it has a distinct look. It's so funny that you capture the, you know, they capture. And I'm like, would try to explain it to people. And people are like, what are you talking about? No one. So I'm so glad that this is like a ubiquitous thing and not just some crazy thing that was on my eyeball or whatever. But okay, before we get more into the book. So this is a real experience you had, and you had to go in the hospital to get this taken care of.
Yeah, it ended up being two surgeries to get it all handled.
Oh my God. So what are those things again? They are.
It's accumulation of gel in the eye. The vitreous gel starts to clump. And it generally, they say it generally happens with age, and a lot of people get floaters, but mine formed into these little black clumps.
Huh.
And that meant that I had a ridiculous amount of floaters, because it started with me the same thing. It was just like four or five, and I thought they were gnats, and I was swatting at them, and it's like, what the hell? Oh, so then I look it up and it's floaters. I'm like, okay, I see what that is, and that seems like there's no big deal. And then I went out for a run, and in the sunlight it looked like I was in a volcano.
Wow.
Just everywhere these little floaters. So on my run, there's an optometrist, and I ran into the optometrist. And I said, optometrist, what's going on? He goes, like, we can do the test. He goes, but if you have medical insurance, you're better off going to the emergency room, because we're going to charge you an arm and a leg. He goes, there, you can do it for your copay. So I took it there. The first doctor looked at me, and this is at a hospital. If you search it up, it's got 1.5 stars on its reviews. And the doctor said, I don't see anything. And this, you know, you're fine, and it just comes with age. And if it gets worse than this, then you can come back. I said, it's already worse than that. So what are you talking about? So then I go to another doctor the next day, to an actual optometrist, and paid the money. And he said, what amateur didn't see these three retinal tears? So,
oh my God.
He put the retinal tears. He gave me pictures of the retinal tears that I could take to that hospital that does the laser surgery, because he said, yeah, I can do the laser surgery, but again, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
And if you go to your primary, it won't. It'll cost you your copay. So I took it there. They look at the pictures. They're like, oh, yeah, well, we see you. Because first thing I walk in, they're like, all right, you hypochondriac fuck, get out of our hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you were just here yesterday. I said, yeah, but here today I'm here with images from an optometrist of retinal tears. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess there are some retinal tears. So at that point, they take me in, they do the laser surgery. And after they finish the laser surgery, they go, oh, by the way, this isn't going to fix your floaters. We have to do a cut surgery for that one.
Oof.
So that's when I had to get the cut surgery. And it was probably like 3 months after the cut surgery that I finally revisited this script and turned it into what we see today.
What it is. Yeah. Also, just quick side note, I leave it to the American medical system to be like just trying to get people out of their hospital as quickly as possible. Like,
yeah.
I get it. They have a lot of people. Yeah, you're overrun. But also, they just like, they're like, we don't care. Just move along.
Yeah.
You know?
Please don't waste our time. Move along.
If you're not dying at this moment, we don't care. We're not going to actually do any research. Here's some pill that we will probably kill you soon. It gets you out of here for now. So that's so interesting. I love that origin story of this book. So tell us a little bit about the campaign and the rewards here.
All right, so let me pull it up here. So campaign, we have digital and physical copies. I'm also doing a black and white version of the book because it has a lot of Junji Ito feel to it. When I was writing, I was kind of thinking about how would Junji Ito, you know, talk about eye floaters. Mm-hmm. So it's got that in it. So we did a black and white version, and it's got the main cover right there is by Dan Schmidt. He's the primary artist, and you know it's going to be a messed up book when the main cover has got a decapitated woman on it.
Yeah, so it's a good start.
Yeah, so there's the black and white cover that we'll do for our black and white variant, and then Cesar Oliveira, he is my artist for Immortal Era, and he did one of the covers for me as well. And I have William Russell, who did one. And in the book, the eye floaters kind of materialize as these weird faces that come out of people's eyes, and once you see those faces, you're no longer in control. And I told William Russell just kind of the premise, and he said, well, do I need to use one of your characters? I said, no, because these floaters would just be moving around the world, kind of like the smile thing, where yeah, we don't know where it originated, we don't know where it's going to end, we just know that it keeps moving from person to person to person. And that's the way these eye floaters goes. They move from one to the next, and when this story ends and our particular character is done, someone else is going to get them. So the floaters haven't left. And then there's also Fish Lee did a cover, which is a Fright Night homage cover. Oh, yeah. And this one's going to be the holofoil cover.
Okay.
So I think it should look really good in foil with kind of the gunshots and the blues and everything. It should really pop in a holofoil.
Yeah.
And for these ones, for the holofoil, I'm doing 50 copies. For the William Russell, I'm doing 100, and then for the black and white, we're just going to do 25. So it's going to be a really kind of limited thing because it's a niche market. A lot of people, they're going to see the great colors that Maya did and think, why do I want a black and white version when there's a beautiful color version? But then you get the collector mentality of, oh, but there's only 25, so I definitely want that version. And then I have some of the Immortal Era stuff available, just my trades. I didn't put a lot of the back issues because I'm running really short on 7, 8, and 9. And if I'm going to blow them out, it'll be on an Immortal Era campaign. So we have the hardcover, softcover trade, the two copies of Corruptor, issues 1 and 2. And then I have the Cthulhu Invades Fairy Tales hardcover, softcover, and preview edition. And then this is a variant cover I did for Rocket Con, which is a con down in San Diego. And it was done by Dan Schmidt, so I figured it's a perfect one to include in this. Since Dan Schmidt is the artist for Floaters, this is the book I worked on together, and I have graded copies of that one available as well. Dan also contributed some of his original art pages, so we have the original cover and a few of the interior pages available on this campaign. And then also there is a t-shirt that you can get with the Fish Lee cover. I love how that cover looked on the t-shirt, so I figure this is a good one to make our t-shirt. And then we have preview of the first few pages, but being as it's a one shot, I made it a much smaller campaign. When I do an Immortal Era campaign, they're gigantic. I mean, I got back issues of variants and, you know, multiple graded books, where this one I wanted to be a smaller campaign where it's kind of just, if you want to give the, you know, take a taste of the Immortal Era universe, I have the trade. I also have issue 1 because I just did a reprint of issue 1. So I just printed a huge amount of copies, so I have plenty of those to go around. It's 2 through 11 that are a lot scarcer right now, which is good. That's kind of where you want to be when I'm about to release issue 12, which will bring a volume 2 of the trade. And I don't need to be sitting on stockpiles of, you know, issue 8 when people are just going to buy the trade together.
Yeah, it's the hard, that inventory thing is always the toughest.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, man, everything, it looks great. The guys, again, check out Floaters on Kickstarter. You got about 10, you know, probably 10, 11 days by the time this comes out. Lots of options, lots of great rewards. Price point's really reasonable for as far as indie comics go. So
yeah, and everything that you see, the price you look at does have free shipping. So if it's 16, you're not paying 16 plus shipping. You're paying 16 including shipping. So that's, I try to make it where we can keep the price is reasonable. I mean, my shirts aren't cheap, but they're not cheap for me. I make very little profit on the shirt, but if you want to walk around and promote my book, then I will sell the shirt at basically what I pay. So you can get floaters and a t-shirt for 40. And then I do have a retail bundle. So if you're a retailer and you want it for your shop, you can get 10 books. And that's again, with free shipping for $40. Mm. And then you can get it with Immortal Era. You can get it with the Cthulhu Invades Fairy Tales, or with the extra large, the double X to, I think, 4X we can do. And then they have all, if you want every cover, we have that. And then we have this kind of everything in the kitchen sink bundle, which gives you graded books and a shirt and every cover and an original art page as well. So
yeah,
not the normal amount. Normally I have double this amount of rewards, but like I said, it's a one shot, so I didn't need to make it the size of an Immortal Era campaign, because those ones are always gigantic.
Yeah, a lot more to manage with that. So right on. Well, man, it looks great. I love the concept. I love how the origin story of this, and I love a good one shot too. I think this is like something that I hope we see more of. You know, this one shot type thing. I'm working on like an anthology that I want to do, kind of in the vein of heavy metal, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I just, it's like, I love this self-contained stories, you know, like I love going back and reading old, Golden Age comic books that were like horror themed or had like this, you know, like the House of Horrors or Witching Hour. So, or like these old, you know, just random story, they throw you in, you read it, it's over. And like,
yeah,
there was a lot of really good storytelling then, and I think that there's, that is really fun to write and it's really fun to read. So I'm glad that you're doing stuff like this.
Yeah, I mean, I've written three stories for the Cthulhu books, the Cthulhu Invades Fairy Tales, and it's nice. I mean, you have 8 pages, you need to learn how to tighten your writing to do a full coherent good story in 8 pages. And like you said, those old books, if you grabbed a copy of an old Tales from the Crypt or an old Vault of Horror, it's 24 pages and you're getting 4 stories.
Yeah.
So I mean, they were able to tell these great tight little stories in 8 pages, and it's a challenge, because I mean, yeah, Immortal Era is a good example. I'm writing it as a 24 issue series. It's long, it's detailed, it's got so much going on. And it takes a lot for people to read it, where floaters, like, here you go, one and done. Could I write more? Sure. But this story is a self-contained one. And I've always said I won't write more, but my artist and a few people that have read it have said, you really should, you shouldn't close the door on the universe. And really, the door's never closed, because floaters aren't going away.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of like, no, it's like, here, you can get it all in one place. You buy this one book and you've got everything you need, and your imagination can fill in the blanks of what happens, you know, after this story.
Yeah. Sometimes less is more, you know. I always say, to bring it back to Star Wars, that when Obi-Wan talks about the Clone Wars in the first Star Wars movie, the Clone Wars was infinitely more interesting in my imagination, because then we got the movie The Clone Wars and we're like, oh, this is sucks.
Or like
Wolverine was so much more interesting before we knew his origin, you know. So yeah, like you just, it's like, yeah this is it, you know. If you want more, fuck you, this is it. It's good. Yeah. Read it, enjoy it, and like the rest is in your imagination, like you said.
Yeah. And I don't give the origin of floaters. We don't find out how they came about. We just know that they're there. They fuck up people's lives and they move on. And I thought, because the more you explain, the worse it gets. And you look at any of the horror movies, like, all right, Nightmare on Elm Street, the more they started like the bastard son of 1,000 maniacs. And it's
yeah,
it got more and more convoluted and stupid the more they tried to explain it. Where it's just, you know, the original explanation, He was a child killer. We killed him. He's getting revenge in his dreams. Perfect.
Yeah, great.
Do we need to know more? No. Yeah. Unfortunately, we did learn more, and everything we learned was garbage.
Yeah,
because it was, it's like, all right, well, why would he be evil? Oh, because he's the son of a thousand maniacs, and his mom was the nun. It's just, no more. Stop
yeah,
it.
We don't, yeah. It's, you know, like I always say that Alien is the perfect example of this. Like, the first Alien movie is the masterpiece, one of my favorite movies, you know? And mm-hmm. you're in, you're out, the alien's dead, you don't know anything about it, you don't know where it came from, you don't know where it went, are there more of them? We don't know. And then, like, and then once you go down the rabbit hole of just, like, the next movie is just, like, shooting lots of aliens, and then we have to have this weird explanation, and then you get to Prometheus, and you're like, holy shit, man. Can I just, I want to go back to when there's just one and it was crazy, you know, like that was a crazy experience and everyone went, oh, you know, Ripley's at the end going, well, that was a wild day and it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best way to do it. And the more, I mean, obviously we don't work in Hollywood and sequels make money,
right.
But the more sequels you make, the worse the story ends up.
Yeah.
Unless it's something like Lord of the Rings, which was written as a trilogy and it was supposed to be a trilogy, each sequel is going to make things worse. I mean, if you're basing it on books, it's a little bit better. But then you look at, okay, The Hobbit, and they decided to make a little book into three movies and add a bunch of extra stuff that we really didn't need. And it's like, all right, did we need 9 hours of one little book?
Yeah,
nope.
No, yeah. The only other exception is Fast and Furious. Obviously, we needed 84 of those, and who doesn't need more Vin Diesel in their life?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, those movies are garbage, but...
I still have never seen one.
Oh, really?
People are like, you got to give them a chance. I'm like, no, I've seen the
please,
trailer.
Please don't.
I hate them.
Please don't.
I've seen the trailer. I already hate them. Why am I going to start a series that I'm already angry at when I haven't seen a minute of it? Like, I haven't watched a Twilight movie either. I don't need to. I know better.
Here's what you should do, Ed. And if you never do, I totally understand. But what you should do is watch the first one and then watch like the 10th one and just be so befuddled at how these characters got to this point, because the first, literally, you've seen the previews, you know, like they're like basically superhero secret agents with cars going to space, they're in submarines underwater, like that's the movie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The first movie, literally the plot of the first movie, is these guys in LA who race little Hondas for, you know, illegal street racing, and a few of them at night use their cars to help to like go jack semi trucks full of DVD players and resell the DVD players. That's the plot of the movie, right? Like these guys, we steal DVD players from semi trucks, then we sell them. And then they're like, somehow that became these guys being like superhero secret agents. And it's the craziest arc that these characters ever took. That is the only entertaining thing about those films, is you go on like, what the fuck?
It move from here to here?
Yeah. Yeah. What point did you decide like, no, we're going to do this. And we're
bringing them to space, which is where all bad sequels end. It seems to be a space.
That's true. Yeah. Jason X. Let's see. I don't know. I'm trying.
Hellraiser. The Leprechaun.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Thank you. Yep. Always in space. Yeah. Go to. We all know you go to the hood, and
the
then
hood,
you
yeah.
go to space. Once you've hit the hood, the next stop is space. So.
And that's when the franchise dies. I mean, granted, it's really dead before that. They get to space, but space is the ultimate death of any of them.
Yeah, that's when
that makes me think, all right, Terrifier 4, is it going to be Terrifier in space?
Right, yeah.
We'll see.
Terraforma fire. I don't know. Trying to work terraform into that. Whatever. They'll figure it out. Let the marketing guys figure it out. That's what they get paid for. All right. Well, Ed, before we get out of here, can tell everyone where they can find you, social media, et cetera, anything like that.
So all of my social media is under Finish Line Comics. I have TikTok, I have Twitter, I have a YouTube channel where I do 2 live streams a week of my own. So you can tune in for that. We do a music show on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings. We do just a talking, you know, just shooting the breeze about random things kind of show. And then I also have Facebook and Instagram. All of those are under Finish Line Comics. If you just search up Floaters on Kickstarter, you're not going to find a bunch of other choices. That's the one that we have. And you can grab this issue. And if you want Immortal Era stuff, we'll be launching in February for issue 12. And we'll have all everything on there for that.
All right, guys, you heard him. Go check it out. Back Floaters. Even if it's over their goal by the time you get there, you can still get in and get this great book. Support indie comics and then follow the page so you can get information when the next issue of Immortal Eras comes out and catch up on that if you're not reading it. There's trade paperbacks, floppy editions, all that stuff. Guys, that is it for today. Again, go to deescomedy.com and inferno.earth or the website, Instagram, all that stuff to check out what we've got going on. And Killstand number 3 is coming your way very soon. So that's it for the Social Hour, and for Ed, I've been Deese, and for Atomic Annie, who may or may not be live tonight. thanks, everyone, and we will see you all next week.